songs, the hymns that we've been singing today, that today is a feast we call the Feast of Christ the King. We celebrate that particular feast on the last Sunday of the church's liturgical year, which means this is the end of the year today, and next Sunday we will begin in earnest a new cycle, a new year. We'll begin with the first Sunday of Advent, and just for the occasion, we ordered snow, just in case you were a little confused. But today on this, the Feast of Christ the King, we're asked to reflect a bit on what that means for us. In the late 60s or early 70s, I can't really recall exactly right now when this movie was premiered. It was a movie little known to most people. It was done in French. And it was a story about the First World War. Didn't get rave reviews. The critics kind of panned it at the beginning, but then it sort of began to make the circuit of art, what we call in the United States art theaters, and as the word spread about it, it became more and more popular, and in fact eventually did win a couple of prizes along the way. And the name of the movie, interestingly enough, was simply The King of Hearts. The King of Hearts. Now, this story was an interesting one because it's about, as I mentioned, the First World War. It's about a French village that had been bombarded by the German forces during that war. And now that the war was ending and the German forces had retreated from that particular area, a platoon of English soldiers was sent in order to clear any unexploded ordnance. The fancy terms to say that if any bombs had landed but not exploded, they had to be defused or disposed of safely so that when people returned to the village, no one would be hurt. And the platoon did most of its business around, but then there was one particular building that was assigned to a soldier, and he went in and he discovered that people were still living there. And eventually he began to understand that the building he had entered was actually an asylum. It was a place where people who were deemed a little unfit or perhaps a little off by the standards of that small town were housed. And one of the things he realized along the way that these people were left there because even as the town was evacuated because of the shelling, because of the bombing, these people were left there. More than likely, he surmised, because these were people who were deemed undesirable. After all, it would be better for everybody if the Germans did overrun the village or bombed it to its ground, that these people would be disposed of in a convenient and easy way. And so the man went about his business searching through the building and the grounds. And the story is about this process of him looking for this bomb. Because, of course, the folks that were there were not of exactly sound mind, and so they would kind of hang around him because he was a stranger. He was this exotic person. He had a uniform, and he had all this sort of paraphernalia with him, and he would be looking in places that they didn't even know were there, and so they would follow him around. And there's conversation about these things, and suddenly then all the people there began to see him as a very important person. He was a very important visitor. After all, he looked like somebody important. He had a fancy military uniform, and he had a gun, and he had other things with him. And so he did not fit in exactly. So they thought he needed a title. They asked him who he was, and he was Corporal so-and-so. And a couple of people said, you're not just a soldier. You must be a king. Because only a king would have the kind of power that you have. Of course, he was taken aback by that. But ultimately, they made a paper crown for him, put the crown on his head, and in this sort of dark comedy that happens during the course of this conversation with all of the people there, they hail him as their king. And he needs a title. He's not the king of France. He's not the king of England. He's not the king of Belgium. So they named him the King of Hearts. Because that's the only other king they knew was from the deck of cards. And it's ironic that they choose the King of Hearts. Because in point of fact, that's the business he was about. He was there to make the place safe so that others could return once all the hostilities were certainly ended and it was safe for people to come back to their homes. And the people in the asylum began to understand that he was there to make them safe, to protect them, to gather them together. And that is, after all, what a king does. King represents the nation, represents the people. And as such, then, he was there. His purpose was to make sure that all were safe, that all were taken care of. And so he became their King of Hearts. Now, in the course of this movie, it's a lot of dialogue in this movie, and it's going on, and eventually we begin to see that this man's heart is really turned toward these people. In realizing why they were still in the asylum, why they were still there, the innate compassion of someone, a simple person from the, you know, from the backwaters of England, I believe, that, you know, all of a sudden began to think, well, why would they have left them behind? And he began to use that compassion to understand them even more deeply. And he became, in large part, one of them. He began to identify in his own life some of the things that were not quite right in the eyes of the world. He began to identify himself with others who were pushed to the margin and to the edge. And he began to realize that, after all of us are like that. All of us have those shortcomings, those disabilities. We hide them. We may be able to dress up in fancy clothes and respected by the people in our communities, but most of us, in our heart of hearts, really know where we fail and when we are in need of someone to gather us up and to protect us from the wiles of the world. And so he became their king, not only by their acclamation, but in reality. And like a true King of Hearts, he found the ordinance that was not exploded, and he put his own life at risk in order to disarm it and to save the people that were all around him. That story sounds awfully familiar to me. Awfully familiar when we begin to tell the story of Jesus. And we see how Jesus did his many miracles, his great works, that he taught all those wonderful things. But ultimately, what separates Jesus away from any other prophet or any other leader is the fact that he was willing to put himself in harm's way for the sake of those who would follow him. And in fact, today, we hear the story in Luke's gospel, a little odd for this time of year, but telling when we begin to realize that the throne that Jesus occupies is not a throne of gold, but the esteem and the honor of the world, but the throne that we see on the cross. That he is willing to put himself in the place of all of us, to put himself in harm's way, put himself in a place where he is willing to give up his life for sake of us. And in that, Jesus becomes the true King of Hearts. Because it isn't for worldly glory. It isn't for the esteem of men and women. It isn't for the riches that come with high office. It isn't for the power that is given over to kings and queens and leaders of nations. It is simply for the love that God has for you and for me. And in that, Jesus demonstrates the very core element of what it is to have a heart. And that is to love. Oh, not the easy, soft kind of sentimental love of a Hallmark greeting card, but the tough and abiding love that comes when we see someone who is dear to us in trouble and we put ourselves in their place and we put ourselves in harm's way so that they may be safe, that they may be saved. That is what Jesus did for you and for me. And in that, Jesus is the true King of hearts. And beyond that, Jesus is king not of some worldly kingdom and power that will fall away someday, as all things do. All nations rise and fall, all empires rise and fall. Time takes its toll, even upon the greatest. And so to be king or emperor in any of those kingdoms is but short-lived. For we know the basic truth of human life is that we all must die, even those of us who hold great power and are deeply honored and esteemed in the eyes of the world. But this Jesus, he doesn't serve the values of any worldly kingdom. In fact, just before this scene, he stands before Pilate and he says, "My kingdom is not of this world." Because his kingdom is actually the kingdom of our hearts. It is about the values and the things that are so important in life that they never end. These are the things that last generation unto generation unto generation, even when we but turn to dust. And those things which we value so highly and esteem so much that they're gone and wiped away by the passage of time. That the things that last forever, the things of heaven, the things of God's kingdom, these are the things of the heart. And it is that that we remember and we think on and we celebrate this day. The kingdom to which we are ascribed is far beyond any worldly power. Any power that can rise and fall, any power that can be destroyed. Rather, it is a kingdom where we put ourselves in the place of others when they are in danger. It is a kingdom that says there is no one in this world that is not worth saving. It is a kingdom where we begin to realize that all are born in the image and the likeness of God, and so are made children of God. And there is a wonderful truth that as we, through our baptism, are made children of God, and it is God's kingdom of which we are a part, that we are brothers and sisters all with Christ, that we begin to realize that if Christ is truly our King, we are princes and princesses all. That we are made into a royal household, a people set apart for the work of the kingdom of God. We hold in our hearts and in our minds and hands the dignity of a royal people, where none of us is king of the other. Where all are equal, where all are princes and princesses, where all pay homage to our liege lord, the King of Hearts. And so as we gather together today, and we bid farewell to a cycle of reflection on the mysteries of God and begin to enter another in the coming week, we are made mindful that all of this happens because our King is King even of time and space, and that we are but servants. We are princes and princesses. We hold the dignity of God in our very hands and hearts, and we rejoice that God has called us to this noble life. And as a king, a prince, a princess of a heart, kings and queens and princes and princesses of love, we take that love to the world in which we live. May the Lord bless us. May the Lord keep us. May the Lord fill us with his life, that we may honor the true King of Hearts.